speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Friday, December 28, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at what's going on in California. We just talked yesterday about the national legalization of hemp. Now, the federal government may pretend that they can't tell the difference between hemp and marijuana, but it's a key difference. Hemp can be used for industrial purposes, for textiles, for food, for nutrition, for paper. It can be used for health purposes. It cannot be used to get high. It absolutely has no reason to be part of the federal war on drugs, even if you support that. And President Trump, of course, signed the law that was passed by the House and the Senate to remove prohibitions on growing industrial hemp. You've been able to buy hemp products that were grown in Canada, for example, but the products, the textiles, the paper, the food products, hemp seed, things like that, CBD oil, they were able to be sold in the United States, even though you could not grow the hemp yourself in the United States. And so a lot of people in areas that would like to be able to make money growing it, like in Kentucky, wasn't just Rand Paul, it was also Mitch McConnell, said, why are we doing this? There's absolutely no way that you could ever get high off of hemp. It doesn't have THC in it, but it does have some good things in it. CBD, for example, is a component that is in it. So as that is happening, we see that Facebook and banks, you know, it's the social media and the banks that are now the cat's paw for prohibition, whether it's the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, or something like hemp. So they're coming out and shutting those things down. We've seen that the banks, as well as social media, are trying to shut down any non-establishment news sites, trying to remove their ability to process payments using the banks. We've seen the same thing done with the Second Amendment. Banks coming in and say, if you sell guns or if you manufacture guns, we're not going to let you do business with our bank. And, of course, social media will purge you as well if you talk about guns. So we've got a lot of news today we're going to cover about that, how California, even with their legalization of recreational marijuana, which you can get high with. They legalized that. They thought, oh, we're going to have a lot of money made out of taxing marijuana. Well, the Golden State has managed to kill the golden goose. And guess how they did it? With regulation and taxes. The same way they're killing everything in their economy. The same way they're killing housing in California. Regulation and taxes. And we're going to see more of that in the coming new year. One of the things that I think we're going to see this next year, I talked yesterday about a Marxist Christmas and how the Marxists in many different areas in China, as well as in our country, are doing their best to stamp out Christmas, especially in China, going in one instance, removing all the decorations in a 27-story retail center, all the Christmas decorations out of a 27-story retail center in a day, everything gone. Purge it, because it is a foreign festival, and because this cult leader wannabe, President Xi, does not want to have any other gods before him. He is a jealous god, as all of these tyrants are. But also, the part of it that I didn't get to yesterday, we're going to get to today, it's not just a Marxist Christmas, but it's going to be a Sharia New Year. And we're going to have now for the, it's going to be the sixth year that they've done hijab day. But be ready, because we've got a couple of Muslim congresswomen, and they're going to change the rules along with Nancy Pelosi to make sure that they can wear the hijab in Congress. I wonder if Margaret Atwood and all of the Handmaid's Tale aficionados are going to be there to wear their headgear, their sign of submission. It's not actually what she came up with. It's not quite as bad as the real thing. But, of course, that was Christians and her imagination doing that.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this December 28, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We have seen a roller coaster stock market this week. Of course, at the top of the Drudge Report, that's exactly what he had. It was a picture of a roller coaster. First, we had the biggest decline on a Christmas Eve on Monday. Then Christmas, of course, they're closed. Then they come back on Wednesday, and they have the biggest gain, single-point gain ever in history, 1,000 points up. Then yesterday, it was down massively by 600 points, and then it recouped that loss and came back and finished 250 points higher. So we had both of those happen yesterday. First, a major decline on Monday. Markets closed Tuesday, major increase on Wednesday, then yesterday a decline and an increase. It's crazy, absolutely crazy. And as many people are pointing out correctly, Gerald Celente was on yesterday. He said, it's not Trump's so-called trade war. And as I pointed out, as President Trump has pointed out, the trade war was begun by the globalists. The trade war is being conducted against America on behalf of the Chinese and other developing countries at our expense. And, of course, the Federal Reserve is a part of that trade war. They have made it a point of saying that either they or the Chinese central bank could neutralize any effort by President Trump to try to equalize the tariffs between our two countries just by manipulating the currency. So if President Trump were to try to, they're not going to lower their tariffs to our level. So if President Trump raises tariffs, they all freak out. They could easily change that by just manipulating their currency, or the Fed can do it to us. And as Gerald Celente pointed out, even what President Trump is proposing to do, raising tariffs, it's such a tiny part of their economy. The real issue is interest rates. And it's really what the Fed is doing. And if we go back to the middle of December, as many people were saying, and many economists were saying, I read this story from Michael Snyder. Stephen Moore told Fox Business that if the Fed raised interest rates, they should all be fired for economic malpractice. That's before President Trump started talking about firing Powell. No, they should all be fired. We should audit the Fed, find out what these people are doing. As another writer put up on the headlines today, he said they are essentially suicide bombers. They are managing a currency that is not in the interest of America. Certainly, if we lose the petrodollar, that's going to make things very difficult because then we're going to have to come face-to-face with our accumulated debt. So to that degree, yes, they're trying to keep the petrodollar as the world's reserve currency. But at what cost? Is it more important for them to be the world's central bank, the central bank of a global currency, than it is whether or not America does well or not? I think that is the case. They're willing to let China grow by 10% a year, but they will throttle us hard if we ever get above 2%. Oh, you're going to burn down the economy. And when we talk about the debt, whether or not they're able to maintain the petrodollar, that debt is going to come back to haunt us very, very quickly. As many people are pointing out, the U.S. interest payments are about to skyrocket. Do you think that matters? I mean, even CBS, even mainstream media news is talking about this. This is their headline. U.S. interest payments are about to skyrocket. Does that matter? America's interest payments have become a point of concern for some on Wall Street. Those payments are projected to triple to more than $600 billion by 2023. $600 billion. In other words, more than $500 billion. More than 100 times what President Trump is asking for the wall this year. Think about that. That was a headline I gave you earlier this week. A Gateway pundit said, look, that's more than 100 times what President Trump is asking for the wall. $500 to $600 billion based on the increase in interest rates. Remember, it was right after President Trump was elected, the middle of December, that Janet Yellen, then the Fed chair, raised interest rates for the first time in 2016. They'd only done it once before in the entire presidency of Barack Obama. that kept interest rates essentially at zero. She raised interest rates from 0.5% to 0.75%. Now we have raised them from 2.25% to 2.5% because they've been giving us 0.25% increase every quarter, and they're strangling the housing market. They're scaring the stock market. And with everything that shaky, they went ahead and did it anyway. And then we have the mainstream media with the audacity to say that President Trump cannot fire the Fed chair for cause. The cause is job performance. That's the reason that you can be fired. That's what for cause means. It doesn't mean that he had a casting couch there in the Federal Reserve. It wasn't a Me Too situation. You know, he wasn't embezzling money. Well, yeah, he was, but not in the strict sense of it. Yeah, the whole Federal Reserve thing is a racket, folks. And that's why, rather than starting with the firing of the Fed, what President Trump needs to do is to audit the Fed. Show us what they don't want us to see. Expose that. I wish the most valuable thing that President Trump could do at this point, and the most damaging thing he could do to his political opponents, is to start declassifying these documents that the FBI and the CIA have used to cover up their crimes and the crimes of their political patrons, and to declassify and to expose what the Federal Reserve has done. He needs to become Julian Assange, Wiki Trump. That's what we really need in the White House. We need a Wiki Trump. Come on, President Trump. Tell us the truth. Show us what these people are up to. That's really what we need to have. Let's take a look at some of the headline news today. We have the Venezuela murder rate is dipping. And the people collecting these statistics inside of Venezuela, this is the Venezuelan Observatory of Violence. And the director there said this is because the criminals are leaving. Oh, but don't worry. Let's keep the borders open. We don't have to worry. They're not going to come here. Of course they're not going to come here. It was amazing because this is coming from Reuters. It's amazing to see CBS talking about what the Federal Reserve is doing to tank our economy and what is happening. We got Venezuelan murderers on the loose. The murder rate in Venezuela, one of the world's highest crime rate countries, dipped in 2018, says Reuters, as some criminals apparently joined millions in leaving the crisis-stricken country. They blamed it on a crash in oil prices. And get this, again, this is Reuters. Reuters said, and an unraveling socialist economic model. Oh, you mean socialism is failing? Newsflash, mainstream media admits it, finally. It's a little bit difficult to keep denying it, but of course you do have people like Occasional Cortex who always pretends that that's not the case. Again, the Venezuelan Observatory of Violence said that while Venezuela still has the highest murder rate, 81 per 100,000 inhabitants, it noted that the figure was down from 89 in 2017 and 92 the year before. So it looks like many of their murderers are emigrating. Where are they emigrating to? Well, they would be, I guess you could call them criminals coming over the border. But that would be racist, right? But this is what the director says. He says, majority of Venezuelans who immigrate are honest people, and they've been forced to look for work elsewhere. But many criminals are among them. This guy sounds like President Trump. Yeah, the majority of them are honest, and they're economic refugees, but there's a lot of criminals among them as well. This is what the guy who's been following the crime rate in Venezuela and watching the immigration says, Director Roberto Bracino. And folks, it's about economic migrants, which is what he had to say, and criminals. But guess what? They're not refugees. They're not being politically oppressed, unless you count socialism as a system of political oppression. And I think we should count that. When we come back, we're going to point out that Trump does not need congressional approval to build the wall. I've been saying this for a very long time. He could do it out of the military budget. But there are some other tricks that he could do. And we can go to the playbook of Obama and how he unconstitutionally funded Obamacare. Actually, President Trump could do it without violating the laws like Barack Obama did. We'll give you those other ways that he could fund the budget without Pelosi when we come back. Stay with us. I tell you what, the thrill is going to be gone from the Democrats if they figure out that Trump doesn't need their approval to build the wall. And President Trump figures that out, quite frankly. He could do it right out of the Defense Department budget. That's very obvious. Somehow, they never had a discussion about how much was going to be spent to build a dozen military bases in Syria and four airfields. They did it very quickly. They did it without any discussion or approval. They kept it quiet from everybody, controlling a third of that country, about the size of Louisiana. Going back to 2012, we had the discussion going back and forth between Leon Panetta and Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions saying, are you going to put troops in Syria? Again, this was 6 years ago. Leon Panetta said, well, we'll consult with our allies at NATO and UN, and we'll let you know. You know, because as Mattis said, our allies, our alliances are the core strength of this country. It's not our Constitution. It's not our military. It's a NATO alliance. And, you know, we're not the policemen of the world because, you know, NATO is the policemen of the world, except that we're NATO. We're NATO. Germans don't pay their bills. France doesn't pay their. They have a small obligation there to start with, and they don't pay that. He said, we'll talk to them, and we might let you know. Well, they didn't, did they? Did they tell you? Everybody was saying, as President Trump said 2000, everybody was saying, well, you know, the week before that, when you had Brett McGurk, the other guy who resigned along with Mattis, Brett McGurk was saying, yeah, we got to stay there because now we got a new mission. We got to be a balance against Iran, and, you know, we're not talking about regime change anymore, and of course ISIS isn't there, so we've got to be there to balance against Iran, and we're going to be there forever. Now he's gone. Good. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. But he was talking, you know, as the mainstream media was covering that for them, essentially posting legal notice to us, I guess, in their mind that, oh, by the way, we're serving you notice or we're going to be in Syria forever, just like Afghanistan and Iraq. We've never had this discussion or whatever, but we're going to be there. And they let it slip that they had 4,000 troops. And people were saying at the time, I thought it was 500 troops. No, it's 4,000. Now it's 2,000, and 2,000 are going to come out. I don't know how many they've got there. I wonder if President Trump knows how many they've got there. Are they telling him the truth? But nevertheless, we'll see what happens with that. President Trump could easily protect our country from invasion. You know, they supposedly have these thousands of troops and a dozen military bases and four airfields there to protect Syria from being invaded by ISIS. Oh, let's say ISIS or Iran, maybe from Iran. Okay. But we can't protect our country from invasion. And if President Trump talks about sending 5,000 troops to the border, they go apoplectic in Washington. You can't do that. There's no money for that. There's no authority for that. We only use the military to invade other countries, and we don't protect this country from foreign invasion. That would be crazy if we did something like that. But let's just take that off the table for right now. Let's just pretend that President Trump is not the commander-in-chief of the military, that he doesn't have the authority and duty to protect our borders with the military. Let's just take that off the table for a moment and think, okay, let's play along with the Democrats and with the mainstream media and with the federal judiciary, and let's just pretend that he's not commander-in-chief of the military and that he doesn't have a duty to protect this country. All right, let's talk about what he could do then to protect this country with a wall and do it without the approval of the Democrats. And this is exactly what the Washington Examiner did. They said, this time of year, of course, you have all these federal bureaucracies that say, hey, you know, we got money that's left over in our budget. You've seen this over and over again. It's been the subject of many situational comedies, even in The Office. I mean, even a little, Dunder Mifflin at the end of the year. Oh, we got some money left over. We can't let that go. It'll just disappear. So it's got to find a way to spend it or to make us look bad. My wife taught school for a couple of years. There's the office. Let's get a copier or whatever. That was the episode. But in school systems, they do this as well because you can't not spend all the money because you want to make sure that you get more money next year. And if you don't spend all the money that was allotted to you, people might look at it and say, well, we can cut the budget over here and allocate that money to a different bureaucracy. Well, they're not going to leave it with the taxpayers, of course, but they could give it to a different bureaucracy. So they're all out there trying to spend this money at the very last minute. They might do things like buy a copier or workout equipment or parkas or leather furniture or Christmas gifts for each other. But for the most part, they've got big, as the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said last week, specific pots of money. Pots of money. That was her term. Pots of money. So we're looking at specific pots of money that we could fund this with. And they are all over the federal bureaucracy, as you can imagine, this time of year. Maybe the shutdown kept them from getting to those pots of money and spending them at the last minute on copy machines or something. So they want to avoid large balances of unobligated funds, which would raise questions as to whether or not that bureaucracy didn't have enough projects to justify its budget. So one of those pots of money, as I point out, the Washington Examiner points out, could be more than $500 million from the Defense Department that's been appropriated for counter-narcotics program. Okay, so that's 10% of what President Trump wants. The additional second route is tapped into the Defense Department's MILCON funding, where about $50 million can be used to construct barriers at the border without congressional approval. Where was the congressional approval to house people that come across the border with their whole families into military bases? How did we find out how to fund that out of the military budget? Oh, that's right. So we can fund them and the health care and the housing and the food and everything else in these military bases, but we can't block them from coming in. Got to get them into the judicial system so they can get into the electoral system for the Democrats. USA Today acknowledged that this is only a small fraction of the money available to President Trump if he decides to exercise his executive power. The Department of Agriculture, here's where the big money is. Department of Agriculture has about $200 billion in outstanding loans for rural development projects such as community buildings and bridges and roads and fire stations and stuff like that. These federal loans to local communities have low default rates that are attractive to private sector investors. This is starting to sound like the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac program, where the federal government would guarantee loans to people to buy homes, and investors liked to get that because it was a safe investment and so forth, until Obama decided that he would tap into it to fund the subsidies that hadn't been constitutionally and lawfully funded by Congress. You even had the House take him to court on that. Even had a federal judge say, no, you can't do that. The Constitution says the House has to spend that money. You can't steal that money from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You can't do that. And then it just stopped. Jeff Sessions ignored it. President Trump maybe didn't know anything about it. I mean, Jerome Corsi talked about that. I had him on many times. He talked about that. That's a big deal. It's a big deal how they bluffed everybody, took that money unconstitutionally, and got away with it. Well, President Trump could do this, and he could do it legally, out of the Department of Agriculture's $200 billion fund.
Move me on to any black square. Use me any time you want. Just remember that the goal is for us all to capture all we want.
Liberty. It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Here we're just talking about how President Trump doesn't need Nancy Pelosi's permission to build the wall, doesn't need all the federal judges to unanimously agree that he can protect our border. He can do it with the Defense Department. Of course, he can also tap into money from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have a $200 billion fund for rural projects. That's kind of a rural project, isn't it? And, of course, we've already seen Barack Obama tap into a similar fund for housing mortgages illegally, unconstitutionally, as agreed by a federal judge that everybody just ignored that, let him do that. And it's kind of interesting when we go back and we look at Obamacare and this case that is now going to make its way to the Supreme Court. I'm not optimistic that if it gets there before we get a replacement for Ginsburg, that anything's going to change. And even then, it might not change. Remember that we have John Roberts, who is increasingly moving to the left on all these different decisions. And we now have Brett Kavanaugh, who was the one who came up with this legal fiction that it was a tax, and therefore the government could force you to buy products from private insurers. That's a novel twist on the Constitution. He twisted it so much he wrung all the truth out of it, didn't he? There's no truth left in the Constitution. Nevertheless, they called them on that. They said, okay, well, you say it's a tax, and now that tax no longer exists because the Congress removed that, removed the fee, the penalty. They said, well, if you don't pay, you're going to get a penalty. So therefore, that's a tax. So therefore, we can hang everything to that, and it is all tied together on that. So the judge says, okay, well, if that's your whole basis, that's your legal argument. That was produced by Brett Kavanaugh. That's why I'm afraid this isn't going to go past the scrutiny of this political group of nine judges there for life. Because you've got Kavanaugh and Roberts, who were, you know, all the people who voted for basically are still there, or else put this thing in like Kavanaugh was involved in it. Nevertheless, they also, you know, when you have a tax that is coming up, revenue, that is supposed to originate in the House. It didn't. It originated in the Senate. That's one strike against it. The other strike is that it's no longer a tax, and that was the basis for it. You got to take that out. Then when it came to funding it, Obama did it unconstitutionally, illegally, by robbing investors, doing what they called a net asset sweep. Isn't that interesting prevarication? Yeah, it's just called robbery is what you and I would be charged with if we did that. But he called it a net asset sweep, and he got away with it. So President Trump could easily do this. You know, Obama spent billions on health care without congressional authorization, without any kind of constitutional powers. Why did he do that? Well, because the establishment wanted him to. The political establishment wanted that. Of course, they had already picked Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney because they knew that they would put through Obamacare in case Barack Obama didn't get elected. Those two would certainly enact the same plan. And Paul Ryan kept it from being overturned the whole time he was there. So they did it without any constitutional authority, without any congressional authorization. They did it because the establishment wanted it, because Barack Obama wanted it for his voters. President Trump, you need to do this constitutionally. You have a duty and you have the authority to protect it with the military. You don't even need to play these games with the USDA budget, but he's sent out signals. It looks like they may be looking at things like that through Press Secretary Sanders saying that. But he needs to keep faith with the Constitution. He needs to keep faith with his voters. Obama kept faith with his voters, even when it meant breaking his oath to the Constitution. Let's take a look while we're talking about the wall. Of course, Nancy Pelosi is out there virtue signaling over the death of the 8-year-old. As CNS News puts it, Pelosi was responding to the death of the 8-year-old, Felipe Alonso Gomez, who died on Christmas Eve in custody. Makes it sound like they picked him up and tortured him Saudi style to death, doesn't it? And I pushed back on this from day one. I said, why is a sick kid being taken on a dangerous journey like that? That is child endangerment. And that was before we learned from the timeline that the father, after they had identified that he was sick, they gave him some medication, said, we need to do further treatment. Oh, he's okay, said the father. He's okay. Takes him away to another facility. The kid starts to get sicker. They notified the people in that facility that they had a sick child that was being brought in. They kept an eye on the child. As they saw that he was getting sicker, they took him away from the father, took him to get medical care. By that time, it was too late. That's according to the timeline released. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi saying, Democrats call on Homeland Security's Inspector General. Yes, yes, he is an Inspector General. To immediately open an investigation into this death. Well, you've already have one. Just look at the timeline, Nancy. Look at the child endangerment, Nancy, that you are an accessory to because you encourage these people to make that dangerous trip and to bring children across, even sick children across. You're not concerned about our children catching disease, are you? Or us? And she said, we have a moral responsibility to ensure all children of God are treated with compassion, except those who are aborted for profit, that she applauds, Planned Parenthood, except for those American children and families who have their children taken away without due process by CPS. I've reported on this many times. I've had a lot of people on with CPS. She doesn't care about that. She will mandate vaxes. She will vaccines. She will take children away from their families. Is she and the Democrats, if you don't go to their schools, if you're homeschooling your kids, something dangerous like that, that really does threaten them. That's nothing that is harming the children at all. But they'll take your kids away without due process. Force the vaccines. If you don't get the vaccines, you're not going to go to school. You're not going to get education. You homeschool? Well, I don't think you're doing that up to snuff. So we're going to take your kids away from you. Right? Well, talk to us about all children of God being treated equally. Nancy Pelosi, as you support abortion. Let's take a look how this looks in Massachusetts, that other Democrat stronghold. You have a woman who was handcuffed for homeschooling her kids because it appears that the Massachusetts school district there determined that they will decide who and who can homeschool and who can't, who can get out of their system, who belongs to them and who doesn't. And she's now filed a lawsuit. This is involving her 8-year-old son. She pulled him from the Worcester Public Schools to homeschool him last January. Now, she is suing the Worcester School Committee, the superintendent, the State Department of Children and Families, that's like CPS, after police entered her home, handcuffed her, arrested her for over what amounted to a paperwork dispute. According to the lawsuit, she is seeking unspecified compensatory damages for violation of her constitutional rights and for mental pain and suffering on her and on her son. Now, what she did was, under Massachusetts law, and they had a court case going back to 1987, you would notify the superintendent of the local school system that you're going to be homeschooling your child. And the burden of proof, according to that case, is on the school system to show that the homeschool program is insufficient. She filed that submission of paperwork. They never responded. Instead of responding to her, months later, they contacted their equivalent of CPS, the Department of Children and Families, and they reported her. And they show up with the police. They start banging on the door. And again, this is the secretary from the superintendent's, the education superintendent, telling the State Department to go get the police and go to her house. And they did. And they did. So the police escalated the situation. They pounded on the door. They threatened to forcibly knock it down when she was intimidated into letting them in. An officer laid hands on her, handcuffed her, ordered her into a chair, yelled in her face while her 8-year-old son watched and cried. Nancy Pelosi, all children of God should be treated with compassion. Stop destroying families. Stop separating children from their families. Stop doing it to Americans so that you can enforce your mind control program on them through your government schools. We'll have more on this when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what happened to this woman who had the audacity to take her child out of public school and notify them, which is all legal, going back to 1987. It used to be very common, going back to the 1980s, used to be very common, or the 70s, for them to arrest parents, for them to take the children away. Some of the parents who resisted arrest or resisted having their children taken away were shot and killed here in America. And fortunately, those days have stopped for a few decades, but they may be on their way back. I'll tell you why in just a moment. Certainly in the Northeast, they have never given up the idea that you and your children are their slave property. You're slaves to them. It's not the millionaire, multimillionaire basketball players or football players like LeBron James pretends that he is a slave. No, no, no. It's the people who are put into bondage to pay for their stadiums, the people who have no legal rights and can have anything done to them. You are the slaves. But before we get into that, I just want to remind you of the specials that we have, the year-end special that we have continued now. We brought back all of the 24-hour Christmas specials that we had, things like BrainForce Plus, 55% off. Ultimate Bone Broth, 55% off. Silver Bullet, 60% off. That's our colloidal silver. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 60% off. We have many products from 50 up to 75% off. We have free shipping store-wide. We have double Patriot points. That's our reward system for discounts in the future. And all orders get a free gift with every order. Take a look at the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com, folks. We really do appreciate your support. Really do appreciate you standing with us this year as the establishment closed in to shut down free speech. I think that's the quite obviously the biggest story of 2018, how they unveiled their plans, how they unveiled themselves as enemies of the Constitution and the First Amendment, just as they've unveiled themselves in the past as enemies of the Second Amendment. They're getting more obvious about that, and we've got some stories here about how they're going to make their moves against the Second Amendment as well coming up in the new year. But let's get back to homeschooling and this approach, because, you know, we have Nancy Pelosi out there virtue signaling over this as she encourages parents to endanger their children to come across the border, even if they're deathly ill. She says that we have a moral responsibility to ensure that all children of God are treated with compassion, unless you're an American. And then you will not be treated with compassion. You will not even get due process. You will have your children taken away if you don't get their mandatory vaccines or their mandatory educations. You might have the government and the people who are friends with Nancy Pelosi, they might help to pay to take your child away. You know, that kind of child separation where you rip them to pieces and stop their beating heart. It's called abortion. She has the audacity to talk about children of God. Anyway, what's happening in Massachusetts? This Lady Goodall, as I pointed out, they don't respond to this. They say, well, you know, we haven't given you permission. That was their permission, their thing, saying, well, if we don't respond and say that we accept your declaration of homeschooling, then we can hold you in violation of our educational laws. And we can say that, and this was basically the case that they came up, they said that it was educational neglect. This child was not in any physical danger. Educational neglect does not justify the bureaucracy sending in uniformed goons to knock your door down and to handcuff you to a chair, yell at you in front of your 8-year-old son until he cries, and then have additional officers come and start searching the home so they can try to find something else that's a real crime instead of their trumped up educational neglect. Now, where the educational neglect came in was when the establishment neglected to do anything with her paperwork. Instead, they called the cops on her. And, of course, it was made clear in the 1987 case that established the right to homeschool in Massachusetts that you make that declaration. You don't have to get them to handshake on that. You don't have to get their approval. But they're trying to assert that, the government bureaucracy. And so she was arrested, taken to the police station. She was booked, but they never filed any charges. What were the charges? Nothing. Nothing. She paid bail, finally made it back home after 7 hours. And now they've had a lawsuit going back and forth. But the battle continued. She submitted another education plan. They still didn't acknowledge her paperwork. So she submitted it again on April the 10th. Then after another voicemail, after another email, and finally a hearing from the secretary on April 25th, her plan was not officially approved until May 9th after her lawyer wrote them a threatening letter. They go months. I mean, this whole thing started back in January of this last year. And they point out many homeschooling families in Massachusetts are waiting for the district to approve their educational plans months after submitting them. Bottom line is, folks, Homeschool Legal Defense Association is your friend. If you homeschool, you need to know about them. Don't ask for permission. They don't have the authority. Don't take the mindset and the posture of a slave. As they point out in this article, it's an excellent article from the Daily Bell. Public schools are in the business of teaching conformity and unquestioning obedience to authority. That's why the government pushes them so hard. Homeschoolers, on the other hand, are by definition nonconformists. They are skeptical of authority figures and of government in general. And you keep that skepticism and don't you ever bow down to these tyrants. these Nancy Pelosi's and others. Take a look at what it looks like in New York. In New York, they have the Department of Education there has issued guidance to empower local government schools to assess the curricula of private schools in their districts and then determine if they're fit to operate. So now they're going to have, again, this is another move, first in Massachusetts, now in New York, to set up the government schools as the arbiters and the inspectors. You know, they're going to stand over you and decide if you are capable of educating your kids. I would say they have to do something about the schools in New York City, where they spend the highest per capita anywhere in the country, and they wind up with a 97 and 98% illiteracy and innumeracy. Kids can't do math. They can't read. They can't think critically. They said the onerous guidelines would give the school district, this is from New American, control over the teacher's accreditation. They would mandate inspections from public school officials. Yeah, we theoretically had that type of thing back in North Carolina. Good luck getting into my house. Good luck. While the new guidelines affect all New York State private schools, they actually stemmed from a 2015 survey purporting to find that, quote, some ultra-Orthodox Jewish yeshivas were barely teaching their students English or other secular subjects, reports the Albany Times-Union. However, a recent analysis of New York State Regents exam scores, they have a statewide Regents exam in New York. You take that, and that's the basis on whether or not you can get into the state universities there. So the Regents exam score showed that, unsurprisingly, the yeshiva students generally outperformed government school pupils. It's not a very high bar. They said state officials announced in a press release that local public schools, quote, have the responsibility to ensure that the education received by non-public school students is substantially equivalent to that received in district public schools. To which you would say, well, so that means that they're going to lower it? Since the private schools, the non-public schools, have higher scores than the public schools, so they're going to get equivalency, that means you're going to lower them. And that's exactly what New American said. They said, well, the private school education have to be dumbed down and sexed up. Yeah, it's part of the Brave New Schools agenda. That's really what they should call it. So this stuff like Common Core, No Child Left Behind, all that stuff was sold to us, by the way, by Republicans. The Bushies. Just pass out the Soma drugs. You know, we can forget the yeshiva school. You know, don't study the Torah or the Bible or anything else like that. No, we're going to have drag queen story hour. That's what we're going to have in our public schools. As they pointed out, Disraeli Reisman, dean of two Brooklyn-based yeshivas, said, our schools have to offer 11 courses to students in grades 5 through 8, a total of 7 hours of daily instruction. Public schools have less than 6 hours a day of prescribed instruction. My, he said, someone could get a crazy idea that government is trying to squeeze religious teaching out of faith-based schools by denying them the time that's now devoted to it. But hey, maybe I'm just being paranoid. No. He's being sarcastic, and he's telling you exactly what they're doing. Exactly what they're doing. It is the deliberate dumbing down, folks, of our society. Charlotte Iserby, Phyllis Schlafly talked about that with the Department of Education. They went there to shut it down, as Ronald Reagan promised, but instead they saw it was going to be pushed to deliberately dumb us down. I would say to deliberately make us degenerate. That's really now become not just dumb, but degenerate. We'll be right back.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, as we look at the great moves that President Trump took this last week in terms of saying we've beaten ISIS, and as I said, it was already announced. Already reported on that Russia's flights had dropped in the preceding weeks by more than 99%. They had dropped from 100 to 110 flights per day to 3 to 4 per week there in terms of fighting ISIS. And the ultimate backfire, I guess we could call it the Bolton backfire, was when Bolton was there with the president. They were on the phone with the president of Turkey, Erdogan. And Bolton is trying to push this new mission, part of the mission creep, being pushed by this creepy neocon, John Bolton. And he was saying, we need to keep Iran under control. Regime change, we're not going to talk about that anymore because that took a lot of hits. Everybody's saying, we got this undeclared war to overthrow a president in another country. We didn't have a vote on this. How do we have the legal authority to do this? How do we have the moral authority to do this? As a Christian nation, we always understood that you don't go to war unless you're attacked first. That goes all the way back to Augustine, the just war theory. War is not justified if you haven't been attacked. And you can then defend yourself. You try to minimize harm to the civilian population. These are all Christian values, moral values that our societies, our civilization was built upon. We've thrown them out the window to become the world's policemen. So we come in and say, we don't like Assad, we'll just take him out. Where's the moral authority for that? Where's the constitutional legal authority for that? There is none. So they stopped talking about regime change. They started talking about, we'll take out ISIS. So President Trump said, fine, we'll take out ISIS. They did. Now it's like, we got to stay here to fight Iran. And so that backfired on him. The question, though, is what is going to happen moving forward? Now Mattis is gone. Now this Brett McGurk, jerk McGurk, who tried to hold a press conference and box in President Trump saying, we're going to be there forever. He's gone now. The report is that Mattis from the World Tribune said Mattis blocked Trump supporters from key Pentagon jobs. Remember, President Trump said he's kind of a Democrat. Well, it turns out he was a lot like the Democrat Party. Mattis mostly hired Democrats. So this is an opportunity for a Trump do-over of political appointees at the Pentagon, tweeted Christian Witten, a former senior advisor at the State Department. That'd be nice if it happens, he said. In a Christmas report, the Washington Times security correspondent, Rowan Scarborough, quoted a former Trump campaign advisor saying that Mattis, quote, was briefing Hillary during the 2016 campaign. Mattis only became a Trump supporter after the election. He then worked hard to keep Trump campaign advisors and surrogates out of the Pentagon, while undermining Trump policies all along. I hope that he doesn't let the door hit him on the way out, said Scarborough. The ex-advisor also said that General Mattis is a cautionary tale for conservatives who are thinking about getting involved in the 2020 reelection campaign. Numerous advisors who took significant personal risks to support Trump during the 2016 campaign had their lives destroyed by a cast of thousands. Meanwhile, Mattis fought hard to keep them out of the Pentagon, adding insult to injury. He noted that insiders said that Mattis's chief of staff, retired Navy Rear Admiral Kevin M. Sweeney, preached that he was going to have a non-political defense department. But instead of a non-political department, what he meant was we were going to use that to keep out anybody that was involved with President Trump. So we're only going to have bureaucrats and not reformers. We're only going to have people who were already there under Obama. See, they're not political. They're now establishment bureaucrats. So we'll keep them. Anybody that would come in and change things, they will be labeled as reformers and they will be kept out by Mattis and his surrogates.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I want to talk a little bit about what may happen in the future in Syria. Not just in Syria. I mean, we may get out of Syria, but what's going to happen really in the Pentagon? That's really the question. Yeah, we got rid of Mattis. As I just point out to you, he's not just kind of a Democrat. President Trump said that about Gary Cohen. That guy who was given like a $200 million or something like that from Goldman Sachs. He was head of Goldman Sachs, and it's like, oh, yeah, we really want him in the White House. So let's give him a golden parachute, and let's accelerate the payout and all that kind of stuff. Make it grease the skids for him. That was absolutely amazing. We're all like scratching our heads saying, has Trump gone off the rails here, putting in so many Goldman Sachs people, especially Gary Cohen? Well, when Gary Cohen finally quit because President Trump is going to try to get rid of the unequal tariffs against us with China, Gary Cohen quit. And Trump said, yeah, he's kind of a globalist. He always was a globalist. And, of course, Mattis always was a Democrat. He was advising Hillary Clinton's campaign throughout the election. And then, after she loses, he becomes a Trump supporter after the election. And then he blocked, along with his retired Navy Rear Admiral Kevin Sweeney, they blocked anybody who is politically on the same page as Trump from getting into the Pentagon. Completely blocked them. Oh, those people would be political because they support President Trump. Again, the bureaucrats who are already here, they're not political at all, as we've seen over the last 2 years with this Russiagate stuff, right? And remember, as we pointed out, Gateway Pundit got some non-disclosure agreements that were leaked to them that Mattis was circulating back in May as to whether or not he should run for president against President Trump in 2020. And they said, yeah, you probably could do pretty well, except you could do even better if you weren't serving under him. Well, that's been taken care of now. That's been taken care of. He's now had a major break with President Trump. He has now been declared the hero. He's now got the laurels that have been put on him by the establishment press and the Democrat Party. Best general we've ever had now because he stood up to Trump and supported the New World Order and said our core strength. Our foreign entanglements, the anti-Washington, it's diametrically opposed to General Washington, General Mattis is. But, of course, he's a politician. But they blocked anybody that would support President Trump as being political. Got to keep them out. Here's an example, as I point out. Michelle Flournoy, first choice to be Deputy Defense Secretary. She served as Obama's Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. And is a Hillary Clinton supporter. She's not political, is she? No, not at all. I mean, Democrats are not political. It's only those people who support President Trump. Yet she was Mattis's first choice for the ultra-plum job of Deputy Defense Secretary, to the exclusion of rank-and-file Republicans who had been outside looking in for 8 years. And now as we look at who's going to replace Mattis, as we see from Zero Hedge, actually it's an article originally from Mint Press, both leading candidates to replace Mattis are maximum war hawks. They may be worse than Mattis. Here are the two. Tom Cotton, the senator. Cotton has repeatedly called for the unilateral bombing of Iran. Oh, sounds just like John McCain. Insisting that it will only take several days and it would not lead to a wider war. Oh, so he's not just a neocon. He is a maximum fool as well. He said he praised Trump's decision in April of 2017 to bomb Syria. Remember when President Trump did that and then did it again the next April? It was like it became like an annual celebration, a false flag celebration. Look, we have a gas attack. And now is the time for us to send in the Air Force and the ground troops into Syria. Oh, wait, they're already there. That's right. They didn't tell us that. But after President Trump made that mistake in 2017 to bomb Syria, Cotton said, it restored our credibility in the world. after Trump again bombed Syria this last April, again, the annual event, Cotton released an official statement praising the attack again. And listen to the mature wording of this. The butcher of Damascus, by that he was meaning the president of Syria, learned this guy writes copy like Kim Jong-un, doesn't he? Kim Il-young, I've forgotten. The little guy, little fat man. he says, the butcher of Damascus learned two lessons tonight the hard way. Weapons of mass destruction won't create a military advantage once the U.S. is done with you. And Russia cannot protect its clients from the United States. We thank our old British and French friends for once again joining us in defending the civilized world. Civilized world. Are we civilized? Do we have any moral code? Do we put up absurd false flags and use that as a false premise to create more death and destruction? Why are we even there in the first place? Why are we even there? But that's one of the candidates. Here's the other guy, maybe even worse than Tom Cotton. John Keane. John Keane is the neocon extraordinaire. As they report in Mint Press, media reports have cited John Keane, Jack, as he's known by to his friends, as Mattis's most likely replacement. And that should concern anyone who is wary of U.S. military escalation in the Middle East. Keane is a frequent commentator on Fox News. He's been described by former CIA analyst Ray McGovern as the go-to general for the neoconservatives. And he has a very close association with all the Kagan clan. That would be people like Fred Kagan, Robert Kagan, their wives, Kimberly Kagan, and Victoria Nuland. Does that sound familiar? Remember Victoria Nuland engineering the overthrow of the government in Ukraine? Regime change everywhere. Keynes wrote a document called Choosing Victory, A Plan for Success in Iraq, which has not aged too well. That plan for success in Iraq was written back in 2007. It included the troop surge in Iraq. It was a blueprint for the Bush administration. And, of course, it was not a plan for success. Keane is the current chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, which was founded by Fred Kagan's wife, Kimberly Kagan, and was formerly chaired by Liz Cheney, daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, Darth Vader himself. The ISW, Institute for the Study of War, is funded by major weapons manufacturers, surprise, surprise, and the military-industrial complex, people such as General Dynamics, Northrop, and DynCorp. Remember DynCorp International? The people who provide training for Afghan police and provide child trafficking as well. And then Palantir. Remember Palantir? The people who do the geospatial analysis, geospatial intelligence, activity-based analysis, human domain analytics, all the stuff that's used for anticipatory intelligence. You know, this is something that is the blueprint for total tyranny, folks. This is the substrate for implementing the kind of social credit scores that we've talked about so many times in China. You do that by having the intelligence and the data mining that Palantir does. They make all of these different connections. These people very cynically reference back to the Lord of the Rings, the Palantir, the crystal balls, everything that they do in their company. Is a reference back to the Lord of the Rings. And, of course, the Palantir were those crystal balls that the kings would communicate with each other. But they could also use that to look into you. Remember when Frodo picked the thing up and Saruman is starting to look inside of him? That's exactly what their intelligence does to you, to your family. These are the people backing this guy. Palantir, of course, is created by the CIA's venture capital firm. They took the gloves off. They took the mask off. They started funding these social media companies, these geospatial intelligence companies to mine your data. They started doing that. They created their own openly, created a venture capital firm to put these people in charge. That's why I say all of the censorship that you're seeing out there, all of this pre-crime analysis, that's all being done by our government, not simply by these private corporations. Welcome back. We're just talking about what's going on in Syria and basically what's going on in the Pentagon. Will President Trump put in somebody else like Mattis? Again, going back to the 2016 election, Mattis was the advisor to Hillary Clinton. And Daily Beast, big fan of the Clintons, big Democrat publication, puts it this way on their headline. Mattis was expected to be tapped by President Hillary Clinton. Instead, he got Trump, but he still got in. still got in. And as President Trump said, he's kind of a Democrat. Yeah, he was. He blocked all of the Republicans out of the Pentagon. So we don't want anybody in here that's political, but then he takes people that were the top of the Obama administration because, you know, oh, they're obviously not political. They've been here for 8 years and carried them over. And this is the problem that we've seen. This has been President Trump's biggest problem in dealing with Washington, the people that he put there, people like Rex Tillerson, for example. Somebody who should have been disqualified for what he did at the Boy Scouts. But also, the guy was a globalist when it comes to climate change. Exxon is pushing that fiction very hard. And he pushed a long time, pushed back against President Trump in terms of the climate change. Eventually, President Trump did the right thing, but he had to do it over the people around him, pushing against him and undermining him all the way, just like he had to do it with Mattis. And so the question is he going to get somebody now who, as we're just talking about Keene, who appears to be the leading candidate for this? In the case of Syria, Keene, who was everybody expects to be put in the place of Mattis, has repeatedly called for the U.S. to directly enter the Syrian conflict, to arm the right Syrian rebels with anti-aircraft weapons. Oh, of course. It sounds just like Lindsey Graham and John McCain and so forth. Same strategy that they have done. You know, they did it in Afghanistan, the Mujahideen, and then the Mujahideen then metamorphosized into Al-Qaeda. Oh, and then they were bad at that point, right? They were bad. And they didn't have anything to do with us. Right. Okay. And then those people that we'd created and armed that went rogue for a while, then they, you know, became ISIS. And although we said that they were still rogue, we started arming them again. And then you had people like Keene and Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who wanted to continue to arm them. But now we call them like al-Nusra, or you know, they keep changing their names, so you can't figure out who the players are. But we really do know who the players are. And so Keene has been calling for us to arm the right Syrian rebels with anti-aircraft weapons and to target Syrian military sites with limited airstrikes or with false flags. We could do it that way. He also championed attacking Syrian ground forces. He called for a forceful overthrow of the Syrian government and for the establishment of a no-fly zone over Syria. This is the guy, and I hope that they're wrong, but this is the guy that the establishment is saying is the leading candidate, John Keene, to replace Mattis. MSN pointed out that we have Bushies that are creeping into the Trump administration. And they use that term because that's the term that President Trump used. He called all the Bush people, called them Bushies, shorthand for anybody that was too establishment, to people who were part of the failed policies of the Bushes. But let's take a look at how this is working out. Earlier this month, they point out, Trump picked Bill Barr, former attorney general under President George H.W. Bush, to be his replacement for Jeff Sessions. The newly confirmed deputy secretary of the Treasury Department, Muzinich, worked on Jeb Bush's presidential campaign, helped to draft his tax plan. Trump's pick to run the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Heath Tarbert served as an associate counsel to George W. Bush. Jim Jeffrey, former senior aide in George W. Bush's White House, became the president's U.S. special representative of Syria in August. And on and on and on. I would keep going down this. This is how President Trump gets blocked. Personnel or policy. And if we're going to fill the White House and the cabinet and all these different places with people from inside Washington, Bush alumni, Bushies, then we're going to be ambushied everywhere we turn on getting anything changed, anything done. This is how they keep the establishment there. Quite frankly, they know this game. When Ronald Reagan was making his, what did the establishment do? They pulled in George Herbert Walker Bush to make sure that things didn't really change. When the CIA's coattails were on fire after the Church Committee hearing, and you had Colby exposing their assassination plots, and people were amazed. And guess what else they were doing? They were listening to the conversations, illegal wiretaps of American citizens in violation of the Constitution without a search warrant. That was being done by the CIA and the NSA. Surprise, surprise. 40 years later, we find that they're doing it again. You know, they created FISA after the Church Commission hearings because you had in the 1960s, as soon as these criminal organizations were created, the NSA and the CIA, they began violating the law and the Constitution and spying on American citizens without a search warrant. And so they said, well, okay, we want you to spy on foreigners, but we're going to create the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that's going to say that you can't spy on anybody unless they're foreigners in foreign countries. You can't spy on Americans in foreign countries, and you can't even spy on foreigners in America. But you can do it to people abroad, you know, and we're going to have this restriction put on you. Well, they turned it around, didn't they? They used the FISA court to try to run a coup against President Trump. And then, of course, we saw with the revelations of patriotic whistleblowers like Bill Binney that the Bushes right away started subverting the Constitution and doing dragnet surveillance of the American public. We learned more about it with the Snowden leaks. But they brought in George H.W. Bush and put him in charge of the CIA to rebuild it after it was embarrassed and had its coattails on fire after the Church Committee hearing. So they brought in George H.W. Bush. When they had Ronald Reagan elected president, they brought in George H.W. Bush to control him as vice president and to make sure they got their globalist agenda through. And now we've got the Bushies coming through the Trump administration. Climate Depot headline, Deep State Undermines Trump. Career U.S. diplomats are working to implement the Paris Agreement. Remember the Paris Agreement that President Trump got rid of over the objections and the fighting of Rex Tillerson? At this most recent U.N. climate summit, and remember, people, this is all coming from the United Nations. It is a globalist agenda. It is a manufactured crisis so they can have a global tax and a global government. They've got to have a global crisis. And so this is it, tailor-made for them. And, of course, they've also pushed things on us like the war on drugs, the Agenda 2030, again, using the beard of environmentalism. But at the recent summit in Katowice, Poland, Obama UN climate envoy Todd Stern said, a perception floats in public that President Trump has stepped out of the Paris Agreement. But at Katowice, we find that the U.S. is deeply engaged at the moment in several negotiations behind closed doors. Behind the back of President Trump. Behind the back of the American people without authority.
Liberty. It's your move. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We've got a story here about Sasha Cohen. He appears to have uncovered a pedophile ring. And, of course, the FBI is not interested. Isn't that interesting? What a surprise. Just to set this up, in kind of a related note, we have George Soros fined in Hong Kong over his naked shorts. If you are not somebody who trades options and futures on a frequent basis, that headline might give you pause. You might think that George Soros has been caught in some kind of a Harvey Weinstein moment here. Me too. Yes, he was fined over his naked shorts. A naked short, by the way, is if you are short selling without borrowing the security or ensuring the security can be borrowed. In other words, you're kind of, some people put it, selling shares that are not confirmed to exist. Oh, that would be exactly the sort of thing you would expect George Soros to be caught doing, right? And that's a little bit easier to envision than George Soros in some actual naked shorts. I don't want to picture that. It's too horrific just to look at his blackened eyes and those sagging sockets. He looks like a classic science fiction villain as it is. And, of course, it's not been a good year in many respects for George Soros. Not only did he get caught in his naked shorts, but he's been accused of being liar, liar, pants on fire by a couple of different countries. His Open Society has now been driven out of at least two countries this year. First, it was out of his native Hungary, Viktor Orban there, the Hungarian president, said, get out of here. You're trying to overthrow our country. You're trying to destroy it with open immigration. And now Turkey has done the same thing. Even Turkey has thrown George Soros out. He has now fled to Vienna out of Hungary. And I guess he's safe there because you just had the Austrian government come after a woman who pointed out that Mohammed married a very, very young girl. And they said, you can't say that. It's like, well, they said it. I'm just pointing out the uncomfortable truth here about this. And she was fined. She fought it all the way up through the European Union court, highest level. And they said, nope, you can't say that about Muslims. And so they upheld that fine. So I guess he's going to be fine. No pun intended. He will not be fined, I guess, in Austria. But let's get back to the story about Sacha Cohen and how the FBI is not interested in a pedophile ring. Not at all. They've got bigger fish to fry. You know, they're coming after President Trump. They can't be bothered with a pedophile ring. You know, this has been, we've had a lot of news about this last year. You know, of course, you know, all these pedophile rings and everything. That was supposedly just, paranoid conspiracy theories by the right wing. That stuff doesn't really exist. Oh, no. No, not at all. All the stuff about Podesta and everything. Oh, don't worry about that. You know, that's just crazy to think that something like that could happen. Or we could have a Franklin cover-up. Those are just conspiracy theories of the right. And yet, this year, we've had the massive scandal in Pennsylvania with the pedo priests and so forth, the cover-up by the Catholic Church. What happened in Australia? We have the number three of the Vatican, Cardinal Pell, the guy who was handling all the money there. And, of course, it seems like these guys who are part of these pedophile rings, just like we see here in the United States, the guys who are high up in that, they also are bundling all the cash contributions for the church as well. And so you have the Vatican bank guy, Cardinal Pell, the number three at the Vatican. He goes back to Australia to face charges there because they got rid of their statute of limitations. These guys, these politicians who are so into pedophilia, make sure they have very short statute of limitations, only 3 years. And that pretty much is what gets them off from being prosecuted. And so they changed that in Australia. They took away that statute of limitations. He had to go back with some new charges because there had been some old ones as well. They found him guilty, and then because 2018 is the year of government censorship, they gagged any reporting about that. They're in Australia. Can't talk about him being convicted. We're going to put a gag on that. So let's talk about what happened with Sacha Cohen. He's doing these parody things where he masquerades as other people. I never have seen him, quite frankly. I guess I'm one of the few people who haven't. I don't know. He didn't get that good a rating. I've never seen this guy. I've read about him. I know of him. I have never watched any of his stuff. I have no plans to ever watch any of his stuff. But while he was filming in Las Vegas, and he was filming as an Italian playboy that he was playing, he created this character called Gio Manaldo. Gio Manaldo. And they said, this is a story reported by Free Thought Project, pointing out that the FBI is not interested in this. So this is what he did. He asked the hotel concierge to procure him a small child for sex, to which the concierge quickly abides. He said, okay. He said, wait a minute. He said, this is a little bit too dark. I cut this out of my series because I didn't want to show this. He said, we wanted to investigate, how does someone like Harvey Weinstein get away with doing what is criminality, essentially, and the network that surrounds him? So we decided that Gio Manaldo would interview a concierge in Las Vegas, he said, in an interview with Deadline. As Cohen spoke to the concierge at the hotel, he confessed to sex with children. And the concierge didn't waver. Instead, he tells Cohen how to cover it up. And he notes how they know people who can silence the boy, quote-unquote, silence the boy. During the interview, Cohen says, I revealed that basically this character, Gio Manaldo, has molested an 8-year-old boy. Now, mind you, this is extreme comedy, and we thought that the guy would leave the room. Instead, this concierge stays in the room. And I go, listen, you got to help me get rid of the problem. This guy starts to advise my character, Gio, how to get rid of the issue. We even at one point talk about murdering the boy, and the concierge is just saying, well, listen, I'm really sorry, but in this country, we just can't drown the boy. This is America. We can't do that. Instead, he says, we got lawyers who can make sure that he never talks again. And then after he gets the concierge to agree to help him cover up the molestation of the innocent young boy, he then asks him if he can get a date with another child. And then at the end of the interview, I say, listen, I want to go out and celebrate now. Can you get me a date for tonight? He says, what do you mean a date? He says, you know, like a young man. Well, what kind of age? I say, lower than bar mitzvah, but older than 8. And he says, yeah, I can put you in touch with somebody who can get you some boys like that. And just like that, we see that this guy doesn't have a problem with procuring children for pedophiles in a very swanky LA, Las Vegas hotel. And obviously, he's had experience in covering this up. He knows lawyers who can keep these kids silent. And so Cohen says, so I turned it over to the FBI because we thought perhaps there's a pedophile ring in Las Vegas that's operating for these very wealthy men. You would think, wouldn't you? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. And this concierge had said that he'd worked for politicians and for various billionaires. But when he turned it over to the FBI, Cohen says the FBI decided not to pursue it. I guess they figured that there was no way they could tie this to President Trump, so they weren't interested in any kind of crimes like this, right? And as the Free Thought Project points out, pedophile rings almost always get traced back to elite politicians and to billionaires, don't they? Like Jeffrey Epstein. But when it comes time for Epstein and other convicted child predators like former Congressman Anthony Weiner or former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert to be held accountable for their crimes, they are given sweetheart deals by the system. And they do less time than people who are caught with marijuana. And a matter of fact, you know, Hastert, again, they couldn't come after him because of the statute of limitations. The judge made it clear that he was sending him to prison for the financial crimes. But, you know, that was what it was official. But he made it very clear in the speech that he was reprehensible. He hated what he had done in terms of being a pedophile and so forth. So they send him to jail for something that should have never been a crime. They allow pedophilia to go unpunished, but they send you to jail for taking your own money out of the bank without filing the prepared reports. That's how they can get President Trump. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I want to talk a little bit more about this because I just think this story about this concierge in Las Vegas exposed as a fixer for pedophiles, for politicians, for billionaires, admitted it. Yeah, I can get you a kid. And I can help to silence that other kid that you got a problem with. And he turns it over to the FBI and the FBI says nothing, does nothing about it. This is what the FBI is, folks. Let's understand this. From the very beginning, you had their prancing founder, J. Edgar Hoover, the cross-dresser, the tranny who started this whole thing, blackmailing politicians left and right. He had his own insurance policies, didn't he? And you had Truman call him out on it. He says, yeah, he's got blackmail on everybody in this dirty town. And they haven't changed. They still got their insurance policies. People like Peter Strzok. Hasn't changed at all. There he is right there, the cross-dresser. the original tranny hero. The founder of the FBI, J. Edgar. And they've got some J. Edgar still there, evidently, who are going to cover up for the pedophiles. Or just kind of lay back and maybe they can get some information they can use to blackmail some billionaires or some powerful politicians. I'll tell you who ought to be investigated. It ought to be the FBI. You know, they're the ones who ought to be in the dock. After what they have done over the last couple of years, defying Congress, stonewalling this corrupt Department of Justice and the corrupt FBI that we have there as they blackmail, try to overthrow our own government. ignore pedophile rings. Nothing to investigate here. And of course, the mainstream media doesn't see anything to investigate there either. That's the amazing thing. Who cares? Who cares? He decided he's not going to show it. He thought it was a little bit too dark. He talks about it. Kind of jokes about it. Oh, that's kind of funny, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And I turn it over to the FBI, but they're not interested. Where are the people in Washington, our elected representatives, who will call up Cohen and say, who did you talk to at the FBI? And start their own investigation. Their own staff need to do that. They need to go on the offensive against these corrupt criminals and the FBI. What a corrupt organization they are. Just unbelievable. Before we get back to that, I just want to remind you of the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. They don't want us talking about this kind of stuff. They don't talk about it, and they don't want us talking about it. That's why they censor us. And the only way that we stay alive, folks, is if you buy products that help your health. How about that? You keep free speech alive, and you increase your health. We've got up to 75% off at our site right now. We're trying to get rid of inventory before the end of the year. We have free shipping, double Patriot points, a free gift with every order. We got things like BrainForce Plus, 55% off. Ultimate Bone Broth, 55% off. We got the Real Red Pill, 60% off. Super Blue, fluoride-free toothpaste and mouthwash. It has nano silver. It has a good halogen, iodine. It does not have fluoride in it. The toothpaste, the mouthwash, those are both 60% off. A lot of products at that big discounts, anywhere from 50 to 75% off. Free shipping store-wide, double Patriot points, a free gift with every order. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. We really could use your support. Let's talk a little bit about socialism here. We have, of course, the Democrats demanding that we have open borders and pushing this. And at the same time, the other thing that is rising up from them, it's not just the new Green Deal that Occasional Cortex is talking about. It is also universal basic income. And as Technology Review points out, this is MIT's Technology Review, said universal basic income had a rough 2018. Now, MIT Technology Review likes universal basic income. All these tech companies do. They start out, first paragraph. Silicon Valley loves the idea of universal basic income. Many in the tech elites tout it as the answer to job losses caused by automation, if only people would give it a chance. And so they talk about how, yeah, you know, it had a lot of experiments that failed this year, that folded. And, you know, but it just didn't have enough time. You know, we got to do a little bit better job with it. But I want to ask this question of the Democrats and of Big Silicon. Maybe that's what we should call them. Instead of Silicon Valley elites, let's just call them Big Silicon. These billionaire criminals who have decided that our free speech is their product, their property to dispose of as they wish. And now they want to say, well, we're going to create in a few years. They know they're going to displace a lot of workers in most industries within the next 6 to 7 years, as long as 10 years, people look at 2030. But most of them are kicking in around the middle of the 2020s. You know, 2025 or whatever. So about 6 years out. They expect to displace about 50% of the people in most professions. And we're not even talking about just the jobs at the bottom level, blue-collar jobs, working-class jobs. No, no, no. This is going up to doctors, lawyers, even Indian chiefs. You know, you don't need Indian chiefs. You can have AI politicians. And so you're going to have 50% unemployment. We're talking about economic situations that are worse than the Great Depression. You don't think that's going to fuel a worldwide yellow vest movement? You don't think that kind of Great Depression is going to fuel a worldwide war and political upheaval? So they're trying to keep a lid on this. They say, oh, these proletarians out there, they put us in a precarious position. They call us the precariat. And so they are looking at ways to pacify us. But think about this, folks. At the same time, they're projecting 50% unemployment for people with their new gadgets and AI. They are full metal, pedal to the floor on open borders and immigration, bringing in cheap workers. They're not just trying to grab all the cash they can before the excrement hits the fan. This is planned destruction and chaos of our societies. They want to make sure that if they load up our societies with these people from other places, that when we start getting 50% unemployment, we start fighting each other. We start fighting the people coming in from Central and South America. You took our jobs, not Silicon Valley and whatever. And they can just stand back and watch us all fight each other. We can fight each other over the different cultures, the different languages, over the different religions and so forth. They create a Tower of Babel inside America and Western Europe, and they just sit back and rake in all the cash. And if we somehow unify together and come after these billionaires, they've got the swarming autonomous killer robots to take us out. That's what Hugo de Garis talks about with his Arlec War. Just think about this. I just want you to think about the fact that it's the Democrats and big Silicon who are pushing a mass migration of people because they need cheap labor. You know, these people are coming here for economic reasons. They're pushing all these people in here when they know that they don't have enough jobs for you, that 50% of you here now are going to be losing your jobs in about 6 or 7 years. And they're going to pack as many people into these countries to make sure that we don't have a way to fight back against this. And so here's how MIT spends it. They say getting people on board with basic income requires data, but this year a number of experiments were cut short, delayed, or ended after a short time. So that means that we got our possible data supply got cut short. Oh, see, this is kind of like climate change. Ignore the data if it doesn't support your hypothesis. So they got a hypothesis. Oh, yeah, we can all just put everybody on the ultimate welfare, universal basic income. And when they try it, and it obviously doesn't work, and they cut it short, they according to MIT, it could work if you do it long enough, if you do it longer. They said back in June, MIT Technology Review speaking here, back in June, we declared basic income could work if you do it Canada style. We talked to people on the ground, getting the checks in Ontario's 4,000-person test, and we saw how it was changing the community. Then, just 2 months later, it was announced that the program is ending in the new year rather than running for 3 years. Last checks will be put out in March of this coming year. In 2016, MIT Technology Review predicted that in 2017, we will find out if basic income makes sense. There were two main tests that we were waiting on. First, there was Finland's promising basic income test, which received a lot of hype when it was launched in 2017. Then in 2018, it was revealed that the program would not be extended beyond its original trial period. It was a failure, a massive failure. And of course, the only place it's going to be tried right now that we see coming up is in Stockton, California, where they've already gone bankrupt. And they're filled with the bankrupt ideas of socialism. And they've got a young millennial mayor there that has the mentality and the experience and the perspective of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We'll talk a little bit more about this and how they push back on it because, folks, this is something they're going to be working very, very hard to shove down your throat, and it's going to include conservatives and libertarians as well pushing that.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment, it's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, folks, we got a lot of problems that we haven't been able to stop yet, and yet they've got some more things in the pipeline waiting for us. Things like smart cities, things like 5G that are going to be coming out this next year, and things like universal basic income. Something that's being pushed very hard by the Democrats and by the technology sector, by big Silicon. And by the MIT Technology Review, saying if only we would give it more time and collect more data, but they cut these things short. Yeah, they're going bankrupt. How much more data do you need? We had decades of East and West Germany. We could see what socialism does. We could see what's happening. We still see. We got many more decades of North and South Korea. We can see what socialism does to people. We can see what's happening in Venezuela. Why do we need to keep running these experiments on universal basic income? We know what happens with it. There is no such thing as a free lunch. And, of course, that's one of their problems. I said, why are these things cut short? Well, I got a couple problems. Number one, politics. Those conservatives don't like it in many cases. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of conservatives and libertarians who are now pushing universal basic income. People like Charles Murray, who should know better. Charles Murray, who wrote losing ground, talking about how welfare was destroying the families that it was supposed to be helping in the inner cities. He was denounced as a racist back in the 1980s. And he was trying to help the people that the welfare system was destroying. And it was the basis for some welfare reform. But now he's out there pushing universal basic income. Why? Oh, because big business wants it. And so they come in and say, well, politics. In Finland, the government there had no intention of properly experimenting with UBI, according to the founders of this program. In Ontario, they said the program was shut down by the province's newly installed conservative government. You know, people who believe that you gotta, socialism doesn't work, because they've seen what happened when you split Germany, what happened when you split Korea. They've seen what happened with Venezuela. They've even seen what happens in Sweden. I've talked about how, you know, the liberals always like to say, well, of course, you like to point out Venezuela, but what about Sweden? Sweden is great. Well, you know what's happening in Sweden? I reported this earlier this year. They're having to give pregnant women and their husbands classes on how to deliver babies in the car, because they've had to, with the added burdens on their social system, they're having to shut down hospitals and delivery services, so you might have an hour or two drive to get somewhere where you could get medical care to deliver your child, and children were being delivered inside the car. So it's like their solution is just teach you how to cope with it. They're not going to give you health care with this. It's just a fraud. It took longer for Sweden to start this system to show its shortcomings than it did for other places, because they started out a prosperous country because of a free market beginning. So unlike Venezuela, they started out with more of other people's money. In this case, the other people's money were the people who came before them, who built the country. But they're running out of it there as well. So they talk about, here's problem number two, funding. As you might imagine, giving away free money is expensive. you got to go to MIT to figure that out. I don't know why. I had some British friends in engineering when I was working at Texas Instruments, and said something about, didn't he go to MIT? And I said, yeah. And the British guy says, say no more. Every person I've met from MIT, sorry if I'm unfairly characterizing people, but look, folks, it's very well known here in the U.S. that MIT, like Harvard, has long been focused more on their diversity programs, getting people like David Hogg in, than getting anybody that's got any real merit. And so the British guys basically called him on the go. They were never impressed with MIT. They just knew a bunch of MIT graduates. And he said, say no more. Everybody that I've met from MIT doesn't know what end is up with anything. But they said, you know, giving away free money is expensive. Who knew? MIT figured this out. We just got to have more experiments, because we're not getting the data outcome that we want. You know, just like with climate change. Government projects, on the other hand, have to get support from tax-paying citizens. So if you have a private test, you got to have generous donors. With government projects, you have to get money from taxpaying citizens. In other words, other people's money, and you eventually run out of it.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
I've got just one more thing I want to say about universal basic income. We're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Larry Pinkney. We had Ann Coulter talk about Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa, the holiday brought to you by the FBI. The same people who don't want to investigate the concierge who is obviously bragging about having procured children for billionaires and politicians, and he knows how to cover it up, bragging about that to Sacha Baron Cohen. And Cohen turns this over to the FBI. They said, nah, we're not interested. We don't care. No, they're not. But when we look at what happened with establishing Kwanzaa and the FBI, it goes back to the FBI's counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO. It also goes back to the fact that they were trying to set up this organization, United Slaves of America, one of the most radical things that you can imagine, with this guy who was a known criminal. And they wound up killing two Black Panthers. You know, Larry Pinkney was with the original Black Panthers. They were dangerous to the FBI, and the FBI pointed it out in their file. He got, with Freedom of Information Act, he got the FBI's file. They said, Pinkney is dangerous because he's uniting people of different races together. They don't want that. See, the FBI wants people like United Slave, and they're going to push people apart with their phony holidays like Kwanzaa. And we've had every president since George W. Bush honor Kwanzaa, including President Trump. And so we're going to talk to Larry Pinkney about the phony origins of this, coming up in another example of the FBI's fingerprints on things. But let's finish up with universal basic income, as MIT is wringing its hands saying, well, you know, we just know that this is going to be a great thing. And we're going to have it because our technology is going to cost cause 50% unemployment in most industries. So we got to have some way to pacify people. This is why the libertarians are even jumping in on this to some degree, and some conservatives, and saying we got to find some way to keep everything from turning into what we're already seeing happening in France with the yellow vests. We got to pacify these people. Universal basic income. And you got a lot of Democrats embracing this. You've got Andrew Yang, who has announced that he's running for president in 2020 as a Democrat, precisely because he wants to focus on this issue. I saw that. I invited him on the program. He accepted. And then he said, never mind. I don't want to come on and debate you over universal basic income. I am happy to have that debate. But just as we see with climate change, like I said before, MIT say, oh, the data that we got, it doesn't look good, but we haven't done enough tests. You know, if the data doesn't support my hypothesis or my agenda, then it's not that I'm wrong. It's just that, we got to modify the data. That's what we saw with ClimateGate. That's what we saw them doing at the University of East Anglia in the UK. And we saw Michael Mann, the guy who concocted the hockey stick nonsense that is used ad infinitum by Al Gore. Oh, yeah, look, CO2 is going to go up exponentially, and then temperatures are going to go up exponentially. Well, CO2 did go up, and temperatures did not go up. So, let's hide the decline, they said. And that's what these guys are saying. Well, you know, these universal basic income experiments are being shut down everywhere because they don't work. So we got some basic problems there. But Andrew Yang, they said, who's running for president in 2020, says the experiments that have already been run are enough to prove that basic income can be successful. Well, come on the program and tell me about it, Andrew. You got the cojones to do that. Do you? You want to lie to us about, you want to come on here and lie to people about socialism on steroids, universal basic income? You want to tell me how we're going to be doing just fine when AI and big silicon takes all of our jobs? You come on and tell me that. You come on and tell me that, you coward. Let's talk about gun control. Kids on Long Island have been invited to exchange toy guns for other toys. They've got a gun exchange, gun buyback, if you will, toy gun buyback on Long Island. You know, and we just covered yesterday, we had the 7 reasons to hate TSA for things that they've done this last year. And one of them, very first one, was confiscating a toy hand grenade. It's like some pink or purple toy hand grenade, and then bragging about it on their Instagram. And of course, they also got ice cube, the plastic that has water in it that freezes. They were shaped in the put in the shape of a bullet. They confiscated that because it was in the shape of a bullet, and so on and so forth. They don't have the authority to take, you can have a shell if it doesn't have the primer, if it doesn't have a bullet in it, doesn't have gunpowder, you can have the shell. But you can't have something that looks like a bullet that's got water in it that freezes so that you can cool your drinks with it and not dilute your drinks as it melts. So you can't have that. Can't have that. Confiscate that. So here we are now on Long Island. And they're getting right there with the TSA. As a matter of fact, maybe they could send the TSA door-to-door to confiscate toy guns. Maybe that's the next thing we're going to have. Maybe that'll be the next mission for our tireless TSA. They can put on the blue gloves, and they can start manhandling the kids and going door-to-door taking their guns. The village of Hempstead, New York, Long Island. This is what the mayor said. Saying no to guns is important, even toy guns. Kids are invited to turn in their water pistols or replica firearms, other imitation weapons for sporting goods, educational items, and other toys. And the police department there said parents could be putting their children's lives at risk by giving them toy guns for Christmas. They must have been watching Christmas Story. You'll put your eye out, kid. Don't get that Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle. You'll put your eye out. Yeah, that's exactly. I tried to get that for my kid. You know, Toys R Us, not sad to see them go, quite frankly. I wanted to get some Western guns for my boys when they were younger. You know, things like that Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot air rifle. And not the pink outfit. That was not what they would not wear that. They were not into cross-dressing or specie dressing either. Anyway, I wanted to get them the classic, Western guns. And, of course, Toys R Us wouldn't carry any of that stuff. I had to go to some historical sites to get stuff like that. And then they weren't, made out of plastic or, didn't look authentic. They were, kind of really crudely done. Go to some of the, places like Colonial Williamsburg or some Civil War battlefields and get guns for them to play with. Because the only thing they would sell at Toys R Us was SWAT team equipment. And it's like, sorry, I don't want my kids to be on the SWAT team. I don't agree with SWAT teams. I don't like militarized police, and I don't want my kids doing that. I want to, so it's like these guys are saying, I want to make sure that nothing happens to you when you grow up. Well, in that case, maybe you should teach them to use real guns. As BizPack Review covers it, they say, New York officials are mocked on social media for the toy gun buyback. As one person says, take my Nerf from me when you can pry it from my cold, dead fingers. So the problem is toy guns are really only dangerous around some Barney Fife police officers who've been trained to shoot first if they get scared. That's exactly, this is real. The real tragedy of Tamir Rice, if you remember back 2014 in Cleveland, I'll never forget that video. I mean, somebody calls up, he's out there basically doing the Red Ryder thing, shooting Black Bart, pew, 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 out in the park. Some nosy neighbor snitch Stasi character calls the police on Tamir Rice, and they pull up, and the police car's like zooming up, doesn't even really come to a complete stop. The guy jumps out of the car shooting and kills that 12-year-old boy, Tamir Rice, in Cleveland. Bipartisan support is growing, folks, for gun confiscation coming up this next year, and it's focusing around red flag laws. And that kind of confiscation is real. And it's just as dangerous as what they did to Tamir Rice. And when you look at it, look at what happened just recently with Governor John Kasich. The House Republicans in Ohio, the legislature, they're led by Republicans, voted to have a gun owner rights bill. And this is for off-duty police officers, not just ordinary people, but armed government workers to be able to access guns and things like that. And Kasich overrode that or vetoed that. Welcome back. Coming up in the next segment, we have Larry Pinkney with us. He's somebody who is one of the founders of the original Black Panthers movement. They were trying to bring people together. That's when the FBI said that they were dangerous. And so the FBI wanted to create other organizations that would pull people apart. And one of those organizations that they celebrated, created the celebration, I should say, Kwanzaa. We're going to go into the history of that, talk about the founder and the history of that organization with Larry Pinkney, who knows about that coming up in the next segment. I think really when we look at Kwanzaa, the way I would characterize it is, Ann Coulter said, it's the holiday brought to you by the FBI. I would kind of say it's the FBI's Festivus. It's as fake as Festivus, but it's not funny. Really isn't funny. It is the airing of grievances to try to drive people apart into racial groups. And so we'll talk about that in the next segment. I want to finish up a little bit of news about guns as well as John Kasich. And then I want to get back to the FBI. Since we're going to be talking about their creation of Kwanzaa, well, let's talk about how they choose to ignore what's going on with this pedophile situation that was exposed by Sacha Baron Cohen in Las Vegas. A concierge saying, yeah, I can get you some kids and I can help you cover up this pain in the neck kid who wants to blow a whistle here. We can silence him. Don't kill him. You know, we got lawyers for that. I've done this before for billionaires and for politicians and so forth. We'll get to that in just a moment. Real quickly, I want to tell you about the specials that we've got, end of year specials, our inventory clearance specials, a continuation of Christmas. We've got all of the specials. Many have brought back the 24-hour specials. Some items up to 75% off. Free shipping store-wide. Double Patriot Points. That's our discount system, our award system for getting discounts in the future. And you get a free gift with every order. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Many products to help you and your family support your health in the coming new year. Now is the time that people typically think about getting healthier. Well, think about it while you can get the products to help you get healthier and stay healthier. You can get those at a massive discount, up to 75% off, free shipping, double Patriot points, and a free gift with every order. As I was talking about what's going on in Ohio, we had John Kasich veto a gun owner's rights bill, but it was overridden by the state house. That's the good news, that rhino had that overridden. What they were not able to override, however, was the veto by John Kasich, this Republican in name only, a bill banning abortion if an unborn baby has a heartbeat. He vetoed that, and the Senate failed to overturn Kasich's veto. And this is a guy who, again, wants to run against President Trump in 2020, apparently. One thing that did get through, and he actually did sign it, Ohio's Right to Life pushed through a dismemberment abortion ban. That was signed into law, and this is going to prevent dismemberment abortions. In other words, you can't take a baby near full term and rip it apart alive. Isn't that a novel idea that we wouldn't do that in America? Isn't that a novel idea for Pelosi? Maybe she should get behind this and protect all God's children. You know, not just the ones that are being drugged over the border sick and endangered by their parents, but maybe the ones who are being ripped apart by their parents with the assistance of the organization that Nancy Pelosi supports unquestionably, Planned Parenthood. Let's talk about that other organization that is out there at the center of so many different crimes. We'll be talking about the FBI coming up. And again, the fact that they are not interested in looking into this pedophile ring that was brought to their attention by Cohen. But it goes beyond that. Social media has got a hand in this as well. A week ago, we had TechCrunch. And this was the headline of the article at the time. WhatsApp has an encrypted child porn problem. WhatsApp chat groups are being used to spread illegal child pornography cloaked by the app's end-to-end encryption. A report from two Israeli NGOs reviewed by TechCrunch details how third-party apps for discovering WhatsApp groups include adult sections that offer invite links to join rings of users trading images of child exploitation. Okay, a week later, this is what's happened. They did an update. Again, from TechCrunch, Google and Facebook fed ad dollars to these child pornography apps that were out there. So not only did they host these things, but you had Google and Facebook profiting from it, selling ads on these child pornography apps. Google, I said, scrambled to remove third-party apps that led users to child porn sharing groups on WhatsApp in the wake of the report that I just read to you. That was a week ago. We contacted Google with the name of one of these apps and evidence that it offers and others that offered links to WhatsApp groups for sharing child exploitation imagery. Several of the apps had more than 100,000 downloads, and they're still functional on devices that have already downloaded them. WhatsApp failed to adequately police its platform, confirming to TechCrunch that it's moderated by its own 300 employees and not by Facebook's 200,000 dedicated security and moderation staffers. And so that's a convenient thing because Facebook was able to make a lot of money selling ads because that was unmoderated content. These removed apps hosted links to child porn sharing rings on WhatsApp were supported with ads that were run by Google and Facebook's ad networks. They said when they are identified and removed from Google Play, Google also suspends their access to its ad networks. However, it refused to disclose how much money these apps earned and whether it would refund the advertisers. Let me give you a guess. You want a quick guess about whether or not Google's going to give that money back? How much money did Google make off of that? And then we tie this into Twitter. You know, Elon Musk, who got miffed at the guy who said that submarine that he came up with, that idea of submarine rescue to get those kids that were trapped in the Thai cave, that was nonsense, he said. So Elon Musk was offended. His ego was crushed. And so he called the guy a pedophile. The British man who was there, the diver who actually did rescue people, and who actually said this was a bunch of nonsense, a cave explorer. And he not only did it once, he doubled down, he tripled down, he quadrupled down on his claims. He said, yeah, this guy's a pedophile, so forth. Insulting Unsworth, referring to him as a child rapist. The people, including his lawyers, started to pay attention. There were even whispers and rumors at the time that Musk may have flexed his power and resources to somehow drum up evidence to support his accusations based on Unsworth's past. Now, as he is suing Musk, Musk taunted him, said, sue me. Yeah, you're not a pedophile. Go ahead and sue me. Well, now they said, we got a statement from the lawyer responding to Elon Musk's legal claim saying that the pedo guy insult could not be defamatory because he put it on Twitter. Isn't that a novel idea? You know, one billionaire, Jack Dorsey, isn't going to come after Elon Musk for doing things like that. You know, we've talked about that in the past. It's like, oh, well, you know, you get in the face of these guys who are demanding that you be shut down. You know, people like Oliver Darcy, who's demanding that we be shut down, pushing Twitter for that. If Alex gets in his face and, says things to him for not being a reporter but being a censor, then we get shut down for harassing him. But Elon Musk can call this guy a pedo and then say, well, it's okay because it's Twitter. That's protected speech. I can say whatever I want to on Twitter. One set of rules for the billionaires, another set of rules for you and I, all of us who are conservative. We'll be right back with Larry Pinkney. Stay with us.
Speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As only Ann Coulter could put it, as she pointedly took on Kwanzaa, she said, Kwanzaa, celebrated exclusively by white liberals, is a fake holiday invented in 1966 by black radical FBI stooge Ron Karinga, also known as Dr. Malana Karinga, founder of United Slaves, the violent nationalist rival to the Black Panthers. Liberals have become so mesmerized by multicultural gibberish that they've forgotten the real history of Kwanzaa and Karinga's United Slaves. In what was ultimately a foolish gamble, during the madness of the 1960s, the FBI encouraged the most extreme black nationalist organizations in order to discredit and to split the left. The more preposterous the group, the better. It's the same function that MSNBC and CNN serve today. It was their counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO. And she goes on to say, now we know the truth. The FBI fueled the bloody rival between the Black Panthers and United Slaves. And this guy who created United Slaves, the guy who created the violence, the violent rivalry to the Black Panthers, and again, his group shot two Black Panthers to death. He himself was accused of violent sexual assault and torture of women. And so I wanted to get Larry Pinkney on, because Larry Pinkney has been on before to talk about how the FBI set up COINTELPRO, how the FBI, as he discovered with his Freedom of Information Act request, had labeled him and his organization as dangerous because they were trying to bring people in the communities together. That's why they wanted to get something like United Slave that was both violent and divisive, and then to create a phony holiday that is being celebrated by every president since George W. Bush, including President Trump this last week, issued another Kwanzaa celebration. So joining us now is Larry Pinkney. You can find him at his writing at BlackActivistWG.org. That's Black Activist Writers Guild. Thank you for joining us, Larry.
Thank you so much. It is always wonderful, wonderful to hear your voice, my brother David. We must intensify.
Yes, it's something that I don't want to get you on when we talk about this because, you know, going back to this rivalry that was created, and you've been on before talking about the FBI's COINTEL program, how they tried to divide and conquer. They tried to divide the races. They wanted to get a very divisive group like United Slave. What do you remember about this? I mean, it was at the time that you were with the group, I guess, that you had the two people that were killed, the two Black Panthers that were killed by United Slave.
Yes, it's extremely painful for me, to be blunt. It enrages me to this very day. Yes, I was in the party, the original Black Panther Party at that time. In fact, was actually just a few blocks away, or I should say a few miles away, in Southern California when Bunchy and the other wonderful brother were literally shot to death by Marlon Ron Karenga's US, meaning United Slaves Organization.
Mm-hmm. US also, because it's like US versus them, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And this was something that to this day pains me deeply. We in the party, meaning the original Black Panther Party, wanted to see unity between all people. It is true that we began in the Black community, obviously, but we reached out and worked with people of all colors, be they Black, white, brown, red, or yellow. The so-called United Slaves, Marlon Ron Karenga's madness, were just the opposite. And, you know, they were what we called pork chop nationalists. And all that means is pork chop Black nationalists. All that means is that we said pork chop because we said, you know what, you're not looking at the picture holistically. You're not looking at the struggle that all people in this country are engaged in. Rather, mm-hmm. you're pursuing and purveying hatred of particularly white folks, but anybody who did not adhere to their, and by the way, Ann Coulter is correct, the United Slaves folks are really nothing more than proto-fascists. Let's
yes.
be blunt.
Yes.
So, yes,
she had this
to
say, too. Let me read this quote from Ann Coulter. She said, despite modern perceptions that blend all the Black activists of the 60s together, the Black Panthers did not hate whites.
That's right.
Although some of their most high-profile leaders were drug dealers and murderers, they did not seek armed revolution.
That's right.
That's what Ann Coulter said about the original Black Panthers.
That's right. And even those folks that were directly, and when I say those folks, I'm talking about some of the Panther leaders, by no means all, but it has come out over the years that the FBI was also directly involved in pushing drugs on the party leaders, all right,
mm-hmm,
in an effort
mm-hmm.
to discredit. I mean, you know, if you're drugged
yeah.
up, you're not in any kind of position to lead a struggle. And I'm not talking about an armed struggle. I'm talking about a political struggle to bring about change, systemic change for everybody. And I repeat, everybody. So, I have to once again agree with her. There's still this mythology out there that the party hated white people. That is simply and totally and utterly untrue. Untrue. As Bobby Seale used to say, you do not fight racism with racism.
And, of course, it wouldn't be the first time that we've caught the government pushing drugs on people. I mean, just take a look at the crack cocaine epidemic that they created, that they pushed on people starting in L.A. and so forth to fund their secret wars. But they also want to make sure that they take people out of the equation. Great way to do that is to get them addicted to drugs. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Not just the leadership, but the entire population.
The entire population. And that's what we need to understand. And, you know, getting back to, if I may, Kwanzaa. You know, to celebrate Kwanzaa, I'm sad to say, it's up to people if they want to do that. But you know what? To celebrate Kwanzaa is tantamount to celebrating COINTELPRO, the infamous, murderous framing counterintelligence program, because essentially that's what it is all about.
Yeah. And when we look at this and we look at the origins of Kwanzaa, the United Slave, Coringa, and so forth, it really does hearken to what we see today with the movement, that you have the NEFL, Black Lives Matter. And by implication, what they're saying is no other lives matter. And they get very angry if somebody says all lives matter. They don't want that narrative. They want it to be divided. And that really is at the essence and the heart of this Kwanzaa celebration. It's not just embracing and celebrating your culture, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, the only problem that anybody ever seems to have with embracing a culture is if somebody embraces a traditional white European culture here. We can't have that. But any other culture, I don't have a problem with anybody celebrating their culture. They want to say, well, this is our culture and you can't be a part of it. It's very exclusionary, very divisive in the way it's done, just like we see with Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Same essence.
It's meant to be that way. This is not by osmosis. This did not come about by osmosis or by coincidence or by accident. What we're witnessing today is essentially a continuation of what was begun in COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program. And so you have these cultural black nationalists, or what we call pork chop nationalists, running around playing on people's emotions, okay? Yeah. Not on critical thinking. Oh, no, don't critically think. Don't do that, for goodness sake. Playing on this, and the game remains the same. Divide and conquer. Manipulate and control. We have to ask ourselves, whose benefit does this serve? Certainly not the benefit of everyday, ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people in our nation.
Absolutely, absolutely right. We're going to have more from Larry Pinkney, more about Kwanzaa and its origins, and also, interestingly, how they have now organized to attack him as he's trying to bring things together in Minneapolis. Again, pushing out anybody who wants to unify. Welcome back. Yeah, something's happening here. It's called Kwanzaa. Maybe many of you haven't looked at this, and of course, it's something that has become very commercialized. We've had presidents like President Trump issuing Kwanzaa celebrations. So where did this come from? It's kind of glossed over. You know, we have a lot of, we have seven principles that are celebrated over 1 week. Oh, they sound great. Things like unity, family, self-determination. Yeah, well, we're all in favor of family values, right? Except that Charles Manson had a family too, didn't he? And when you look at the guy who started Kwanzaa, he was part of a group that the FBI promoted to try to divide the country. As Ann Coulter said, they were a counter to the original Black Panthers, who were trying to unite people peacefully and effect change. That's what made them dangerous. They actually wrote that about our guest here, Larry Pinkney. The FBI said he's dangerous because he's unifying people. At the beginning, they were all just about the black community, but then they realized, hey, we're really going to affect change. We're going to get everybody involved. And that's why if you want to stop police brutality, you don't say only Black Lives Matter. You try to get everybody involved in this, because you can play the statistical games. You can say there's a higher percentage of black people killed by the police. True. But there are more white people killed by the police. That's also true. Why wouldn't you go to the larger group and say, let's affect change, unless you don't want change affected? And then you divide people. Black lives only matter. Only black lives matter. And that's what they were trying to do with Coringa and his group, United Slaves. They saw them as a counter. The FBI pushed them forward as a counter to the Black Panthers. And it wasn't just the shooting where his group killed two Black Panthers. It was also that Coringa himself was convicted of sexual assault and torture against his own female followers. The LA Times reported that he placed a hot soldering iron in one woman's mouth, and he used a vise to crush another's toe. Nice guy. How about that for family values? That kind of sounds like Charles Manson family values. And, of course, they celebrate seven principles. But as Ann Coulter points out, those seven principles really harken back to the same principles of the Symbionese Liberation Army, that Marxist group that many of you go back to the 1970s. You remember Patty Hearst? She's kidnapped, and then she went native and joined the Marxists and so forth. You had pictures of her joining them, robbing banks and so forth. And those are the same principles that are being put forth by Kwanzaa. It's Marxism that is there at the heart of it, Marxism and division. So joining us now is Larry Pinkney. You know, Larry, one of the things that Ann Coulter said, you know, when you look at the history of Coringa, you know, the murders, the sexual assault and the torture of female followers, she said it's as if David Duke invented a holiday called Anglica or something, which he based on the philosophy of Mein Kampf. And clueless public school teachers began celebrating the made-up racist holiday. And that's basically what we've seen happening with a lot of this stuff. I mean, there's ways to celebrate your culture and inclusiveness, but this is not inclusive. It is a isolating thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's exclusive, and it's meant to be that way. You know, let me just take it one step further. The fact is that if there was really the word for unity in Swahili, and by the way, Swahili itself is a language that was ultimately created to, it's not an original African language. It is an African language, but it was created primarily to bring essentially countries in East Africa, i.e. Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya, together in terms, when I say together, I mean in terms of linguistics, because there are so many different languages in those countries. So Swahili was created. Now, unlike, for example, in Zambia, one of the major languages is Unyanja. Unyanja is an original African language. Anyway, let me move on quickly. The point is that we have to understand that there are always tactics. There are always tactics to divide and conquer. The big thing today, and it's getting bigger, I'm sad to say, is what they now call racial equity. Racial equity. Nonsense. It's not about, to these people who are pushing this, it's not about equity, i.e. fairness across the board to everyone. It's nothing but an extension, primarily, of the same old pork chop cultural black nationalist insanity that was started back in the late to mid-60s to late 60s to the 70s. Same thing. But now they call it racial equity. And white liberals, quote-unquote, are jumping on board blindly, like three blind mice, instead of saying, wait a minute, if this is equity, it should be serving all people.
That's right.
And that's not the case.
Yeah, you want equality of opportunity, not equality of results. And yet one of the things that they were teaching in this, besides classical Marxism, they also believed that one's racial identity determined life's conditions and chances and so forth. So we're back to identity politics again. And that has been the great divider of all this. And you always have the white liberals, the white Marxists, people like Bill Ayers, who started using, with the Weather Underground, started using white skin privilege because they realized that here in America, they weren't getting anywhere by trying to break people into economic groups like the Marxists did in Europe. So they wanted to break people into racial groups and have them fighting each other over racial groups. So that's why we have so much focus on racial identity politics.
That's right. And this whole thing of racial identity politics, and quite frankly, David, across the board, identity politics has nothing to do with holistic politics. And by holistic, I mean what's in the common interest of all of us. I repeat, all of us. But no, they push this Black Lives Matter. Well, tell me something I don't know. That Black Lives Matter. You know, after having been set up and targeted by the FBI, et cetera. I don't know Black Lives Matter. Common sense. But what they're really saying is only Black Lives Matter. And
that's
then
right.
they get their stooges, their neoliberal whites to go along with it. And, oh, yes. No. They should be standing up and saying, wait a minute. All lives are important. All lives are equal. That is how we are going to improve and make our country greater. No other way.
That's right. And what I think is really important for people to understand, and I was glad to see Ann Coulter pointing this out, was the FBI's COINTEL program. The fact that we have the federal government, specifically the FBI, that is involved in trying to overthrow our elections, trying to divide our country over and over again. This has been their history throughout decades, blackmailing politicians from the early days of J. Edgar Hoover, the criminal things that have been done by that organization that are still being done by them. Mm-hmm. It has become, you know, and that's, I think, really the essence of what needs to be taken away. As she pointed out in this article, maybe Karenga was just being used by them as a dupe, or maybe he was a willing participant in this. But nevertheless, it was really the FBI that was pushing this. And that's why the essence of her story is, you know, we're basically, you know, celebrating an FBI Festivus is what really is like some made up thing, but there's nothing funny about it. It's just there so that you can air your grievances against other groups is really what this is about.
Right. And this is not what we as human beings, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow, this is not what we as human beings should be about. We should be about pulling for each other. I keep saying to people, is the hunger of a white baby any different from the hunger of a black baby or a brown baby or a That's yellow right. baby? Of course That's not. Right. A hungry stomach is a hungry stomach. The color has no bearing on that. And I just get so, after all these years of struggling and fighting for equality for all people, I see this crap raising its ugly head once more.
That's right. It bothers me when I see Tamir Rice shot for no reason. Mm-hmm. It isn't any better or worse because he's black. I mean, it's a horrible thing to see a young boy killed for no reason. And we need to change the way the police interact with people for things like that. But, you know, as we look at Christmas time, as we look at celebrating black culture, I love to celebrate black culture at Christmas time, Larry. Some of my favorite stuff, as you know, is jazz. I love to listen to yeah. Christmas music in a jazz form. I mean, there's many contributions that black culture has made to our culture. And that's the thing that really needs to be celebrated, bringing that all together. And that's one of the things I think you really do well. We didn't get a chance to get into how they've come after you personally. And I'm glad to see that you're not sitting back and just letting them tar and slander you. You're fighting back against the slurs that they're pushing on you because you're trying to unify people. Same thing. It's been going on your entire life. People come after you when you try to unify. Again, Larry Pinkney, you can find him at blackactivistwg.org. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Take care. Love you, bro.